She was a good kid. She was happy.
I was known for being the jokester.
Eddie, he was always a fireball.
We were talking about how funny it would be if we made a fake MySpace page about my vice principal.
I was trying to stay out of trouble. That's when everything started.
Whatever sins you have committed, you can't go back and undo it.
Chivarella was a no-nonsense, zero-tolerance judge. He always jailed kids.
You are going to experience prison. I'll be glad to put you there.
The way Chivarella ran the courtroom, you could have had F. Lee Bailey there, and the kids would have gone away.
There's a mechanism that takes over that keeps kids in that system.
No one listened because we were kids.
There was never any instance of guilt or innocence. They were locking him up.
Really high number of kids appearing without counsel.
We have no rights. He's in their custody now.
It is unbelievable. We're talking about children.
I wanted them to be scared out of their minds. I don't understand how that was a bad thing.
Former Luzerne County judge faces charges tonight
in a scandal known as Kids for Cash.
$2.6 million
in return for sentencing kids to juvenile detention.
I never sent a kid away for a penny. I'm not this mad judge who was just putting them in shackles, throwing kids away.
He went there as a free-spirited kid. He came out a hardened man, I'd say.
Here I was saying we can trust that judge to be fair, and that's not what happened.
I was scared every day.
I was only 14. All those years I missed.
This is not a cash for kids case.
This is going bad! You ruined my life!
I still wake up from nightmares.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Tax Crime Junkies. You're listening to part two, the final episode of our dive into delinquent judges and juvenile delinquents.
If you missed the first installment, we encourage you to go back and listen to the previous episode, then come back and listen to this one.
And if you're new to our pod, I'm your host, Dominique Molina. I'm a CPA, certified tax strategist. I have a degree in law and lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. And with me today is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom Gorzynski.
Hey, I'm Tom Gorzynski. I'm an enrolled agent. I'm admitted to practice before the U.S. Tax Court as a non-attorney. I'm a tax instructor, and I have a real interest in true crime. Together, we decided to create a true crime podcast to combine our love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. We are the Tax Crime Junkies. Like Dominique said, this is the second part of a two-part series about a couple of corrupt Pennsylvania judges who were the ringleaders of the infamous Kids for Cash scandal from the early 2000s. In case you need a refresher, the story follows Mark Ciavarella and Michael Conahan. Ciavarella was a county juvenile judge with a reputation for being tough on crime and especially tough on kids who committed crime. Ciavarella, along with his co-conspirator, President Judge Michael Conahan, colluded to make millions of dollars by sending first-time juvenile offenders to detention centers that they had a financial interest in.
Very, very shady. I mean, talk about conflict of interest. Here's where we left off. The year's 2003, and PA Childcare, a for-profit juvenile detention center, is officially open for business. And business is booming. Ciavarella and Conahan have collected almost a combined $1 million in finder's fees to facilitate the opening of PA Childcare. And now they need to keep that center up and running by ensuring that the cells stay occupied with who they deem to be juvenile delinquents.
And Ciavarella does just that. Except the kids he's sending to juvie are not being given a fair trial with due process. Pretty much anyone that steps into his courtroom is destined for a heavy punishment regardless of their crime. And some of these crimes are petty. For example, something as basic as a moody teen saying the F word in school is enough for Ciavarella to punish the teen to the fullest extent of the law. These charges these kids are facing are completely unwarranted.
And what do you do? Who do you call? They're the judge.
Right.
That's supposed to be our check and balance in the legal system. While this is going on and innocent child's lives are being ruined, Mark Ciavarella and his partner in crime, Judge Michael Conahan, they're living the high life. It's 2003, and both of them are around $500,000 richer than before. And here's what they do with their newfound wealth. At the end of 2003, Ciavarella and Conahan form an LLC, but they're not the owners. Their wives' names are the owners.
I can't imagine why they're doing this.
And of course, that's the entity that's used to purchase a luxury condominium in Florida. This move is purposeful, intentional, and strategic. Tom, you remember that guy, Robert Powell?
Oh, I do. He's the primary investor and the owner of PA Childcare.
Right. So apparently, Powell's been docking his boat at a marina near the same condo that Ciavarella and Conahan have just purchased. So when we look at court documents and testimony, Conahan and Ciavarella have already blown through their combined $1 million finder's fee. So now they want Powell to cough up some money. They tell him that their newly established LLC was set up so that they can make payments look legitimate. Now, Powell feels like they're extorting him, and they sort of are.
Oh, I agree.
So much of PA Childcare's success relies on these judges sentencing juveniles there by Ciavarella. He's in charge of the juvenile division, and Powell's got lots of bills to pay, so he can't risk his business going under. They got him between a rock and a hard place. In this moment, he feels like he has no choice but to just pay up. So he writes a few checks and identifies them as rental payments for Ciavarella and Conahan's condominium that they own together in their wives' names.
Wow. So it seems like they're actively trying to hide the true source of this dirty money. And who could blame them? They know it's wrong. Doesn't that qualify as money laundering?
I wouldn't guess so.
Well, anyway, the court documents then go on to say that Powell pays a total of, get this, Dominique, $590,000 in less than 9 months for the quote-unquote rental of the condo, even though he only alleges he used it twice in 3 years.
Ooh.
That must be one nice condo,
let me tell you.
But somehow, and this is where the greed gets extreme, an additional $590,000 just isn't enough for Ciavarella and Conahan. In 2005, Powell expands the PA Childcare brand. A new property called Western PA Childcare opens. It was built by Robert Miracle, the same builder who did the original facility. Ciavarella and Conahan feel like they're owed a piece of that pie, and they come looking to collect another finder's fee. So Powell instructs Miracle to wire a referral fee to the LLC as a quote-unquote rental payment. Ciavarella's wife, remember, it's technically her LLC, withdraws some of that money and deposits it in her husband's account.
So they're not actually very good hiding their activities. She's writing a check.
You know, we don't know if Ciavarella's wife was in on it, if she just thought the money was there. Either way, it's really sad that he would get his family involved in his deceit.
Absolutely. I can't imagine that. They're shaking down this person. I imagine that the people involved with this probably regret ever getting involved with these judges. And Ciavarella is already playing with fire. It'll be punishment enough for his family if he gets caught. but then to tell his wife what to do, and it's an illegal activity, and that's going to make her an accessory to his crimes. To me, that's unconscionable. Anyway, the second finder's fee isn't declared on Ciavarella's tax returns, and it also does not get reported to the administrative offices of the Pennsylvania courts. And in 2006, Ciavarella and Conahan receive yet another finder's fee.
Unbelievable.
This one is for an expansion to PA childcare. Again, the money's disguised as a rental payment through that LLC. And of course, it can't be reported because then people would know about it. And all they have to do is keep those facilities full.
Right. So around this point, Powell starts trying to remove himself from the judge's influence for obvious reasons. He moves his boat to Costa Rica. Now, side note, you can't make this up. The boat is named Real Justice, R-E-E-L.
I love boat names. They're so cool.
But what kind of irony is that?
Right.
Seriously? All right. Now that Real Justice is no longer docked at the crooked judge's condo, the two judges don't have a front anymore.
Oh, right. He's not renting.
Why would Powell P. rent on a condo if his boat isn't there? Now, this doesn't stop Ciavarella and Conahan. They start demanding payments in cash.
Oh, here's
the here's where it goes. Yes. Powell attempts to dodge this by taking his family to Italy for a summer. That's a fun way to dodge the judges, right? But it's only a temporary solution. When he returns, Ciavarella and Conahan are there, waiting with their hand out, asking for their payment.
Literally.
Literally wanting the cash. The Pipers need to get paid. Eventually, Powell feels backed into a corner. And again, you can't make this stuff up. He starts stuffing FedEx boxes with cash and has one of his junior attorneys deliver them, boxes of cash, to a judge at his office.
And of course, he tells his associate, don't look in the box. Don't open the box. And he questions her when she gets back. Did you open the box? That would make me want to open the box, Tom. I would definitely.
I would have opened the box.
Over the next couple of years, things are not looking good for Powell or the citizens of Lucerne County, because every day, dozens and dozens of first-time juvenile offenders are being wrongfully shipped away to boot camps and detention centers to the benefit of these crooked judges. Each week, countless families are torn apart and hundreds of young lives are being destroyed, all in the name of greed. And it's worse than just having their freedom taken away, Tom, because they're now mingling and locked up with actual violent criminals. They could get hurt physically, and they're learning a new way of behaving in the world.
And aren't they also draining the county of money?
Absolutely.
They're paying all of this money out of tax dollars to support kids who don't even need to be in juvie to be in juvie.
Right. I'm surprised, actually, because that is how they got busted,
right,
ultimately, because if you're working on a budget, especially for any length of time, it's really difficult to budget things. Everybody wants,
right,
money for this and that project, and so you have to get really picky about how much you're going to allocate. And soon, it doesn't take very long before the judge's racket begins to unravel. But let's fast forward to 2007, and Laureen Transui is on the phone with a local police officer. Laureen is a middle-aged woman with short, cropped, honey blonde hair. She's got a 14-year-old daughter named Hillary. What the officer is telling Laureen is baffling. He says he's going to charge Hillary with abuse of the internet, with stalking, and with terrorism.
Wait, a 14-year-old with a terrorism charge?
Now, I have met some teenagers in my day. I've been a teenager, and I might refer to them as terrorists. But the legal definition of terrorism?
No.
What's the catalyst for these extreme charges? It's all because of a MySpace page. Tom, you remember MySpace?
Oh, I do. MySpace, I have a fond memories of MySpace. If you don't remember, it was the original social media platform. It predated Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. Anyway, Hillary's in the ninth grade, and she's a class clown. And in true class clown fashion, Hillary thinks it'd be funny to pull a prank. So she makes a MySpace page pretending to be her vice principal, Mrs. Gregory. Hillary scribbles a portrait of her teacher and sets it as the profile photo. Then she writes a bio casting the fake Mrs. Gregory as, quote, a fun-loving, outgoing individual who spends most of her time reading silly teen magazines and daydreaming of Johnny Depp in nothing but his tidy whiteies, unquote.
That's a pretty good prank.
I mean, it is. As far as pranks go, I mean, it's relatively wholesome,
absolutely,
right? It's clear that Hillary is simply immature. There's no malice. And to prove it, Hillary even writes a disclaimer that says the page doesn't belong to the real Mrs. Gregory.
Well, it sounds clear to me.
Right. She's just a teenager who's hoping her vice principal will have a sense of humor.
Well, unfortunately, Mrs. Gregory doesn't have a sense of humor at all. And she decides she's going to punish Hillary. But she doesn't give Hillary detention or a suspension. Instead, she calls the cops. Now, you're probably wondering why something this harmless would get the cops called on a teenage girl. This is all taking place just a few years after the Columbine shooting. So timing is really key here. And Hillary's school, along with many other schools around the country, have adopted a zero tolerance policy to any kind of misbehavior, no matter big or small. The administration is trying to crack down, and they've adopted this policy. They're treating every infraction extremely seriously, and they're doing it because they want to prevent their own Columbine from happening. In fact, Judge Ciavarella has given talks at Hillary's school where he tells the students that if they act out, he's going to send them away. And in fact, this is exactly what happens. He points at every student in the audience for which he makes frequent visits to the schools. I can't say a judge has ever visited my school during that time, but tells them, you've seen me, you've been warned, watch out because I am coming after you. Anyway, while it shouldn't be a surprise to Hillary that her punishment is so extreme, she never thought she'd find herself in this situation, so she didn't really pay attention to Ciavarella when he came to her school. She's a good kid.
Now let's fast forward to Hillary's day in court. Hillary and Laureen enter the courthouse. Neither of them are concerned. Hillary knows she didn't do anything that bad. And Laureen, guess what? She's a social worker. So she knows the system. She knows how these cases should go. Hillary and Laureen check in. An employee asks if Hillary has a lawyer. Laureen says no. So the employee hands Laureen a form and Laureen signs it. She thinks it's the form for requesting a public defender. But then Hillary is called into the courtroom without an attorney and Laureen is confused.
And these cases can be confusing, even especially for someone who has been in court many times as part of her profession.
Right.
And it's not going according to how she's familiar with it. So right away, Hillary's standing right in front of Ciavarella. And here's what Ciavarella asks. What the hell makes you think you can do this kind of crap? Hillary tries to show maturity and take accountability, but Ciavarella doesn't seem to care. And here's the key question that he begins to ask every single student that comes in front of him. He asks her if she remembers what he said at the assembly at her school. And Hillary admits she doesn't recall. That's when the judge sends her to get booked. Again, we've got a trial that lasts all of 90 seconds, And in that time, Hillary tells the truth that, yes, it was her.
Right.
And boom, then she's taken away. She doesn't even get a chance to say goodbye to her mom. Remember, neither one of them thought she'd be going away.
Well, Laureen is obviously shocked and distraught and very confused. None of what happened is typical in a court proceeding. She can feel that something's not right. She immediately takes action. She calls the probation department, the public defender's office, the American Civil Liberties Union, but nobody is able to help. She gets in touch with a nonprofit called the Juvenile Law Center. When Laureen tells them what happened, they agree. Something is crazy in Judge Ciavarella's courtroom. For example, that form that she signed, the one where she thought she would get her daughter a lawyer, that was actually a waiver to the right to counsel.
Wow.
Laureen was basically tricked into signing away her daughter's right to an attorney.
And this is where we're crossing into someone's constitutional rights, because think of how carefully police officers have to be around your right to an attorney.
Right.
There's a reason that right is protected, is to prevent scandals like this from occurring. But juvenile law is different. And in fact, that's why Juvenile Law Center exists, is to try to stand up and fight for people like Hillary. So they agree to take on Hillary's case and they start digging. What they find is appalling. They learn that over 50% of the kids who were tried by Ciavarella don't have counsel. And that is a dead giveaway, because if we put that into perspective, the state average at that time of juveniles without representation was 3%. So that is a huge disparity.
Now, while the Juvenile Law Center is building their case against Ciavarella, Ciavarella and Conahan are trying to do what? You want to take a guess?
Get money.
Get more cash. They want another finder's fee. The greed is unbelievable with these two. And this one is for the expansion to Western PA childcare. But, a major wrench gets thrown into their plans, because by the fall of 2007, the FBI comes sniffing around. We're not sure who tipped them off, but somehow they catch wind of the shady behavior happening at the Luzerne County Courthouse. We're also not sure how Ciavarella becomes aware that the feds are on his tail, but he knows and he's trying to cover his tracks.
I bet you it was Laureen.
You think?
Well, we never know the identity.
Yeah. But
Maureen was stopping at nothing to protect her child. And that's not to say the other parents weren't concerned. But again, we are brought up to respect the legal system. So it's hard to believe that people that are a part of that system, judges are the head of the court. It's hard to believe that they're dirty.
Maybe somebody peeked in that box of cash.
Maybe. That's true, right? According to court testimony, Robert Maracle, the builder, visits Ciavarella in his chambers one day. And when he enters the dimly lit room, Ciavarella puts his finger to his lips, indicating for him to be quiet. It seems that Ciavarella thinks his office has been bugged.
Ooh, paranoia abound.
So he grabs a slip of paper and writes down, "Wired? ? Check yes or no." I just have to laugh.
Right.
That's so silly. How many times can you say you've gotten a note like that? Never in my life. Now, the judge is presumably talking about the wire transfer for the finder's fee that he's expecting to get from Western PA childcare expansion. Maracle circles the word no, and then Ciavarella guides him into a courtroom and tells him that he's being investigated by a grand jury. Well, he's a judge.
I'm sure
that you hear through the grapevine, right? He explains that he could go to jail if they find out that he directed the finder's fees to go to him through Powell. Maracle believes that Ciavarella is asking him to alter some documents that would make it seem like he paid referral fees directly to Ciavarella instead of Powell. So now he's trying to cover up his cover-up.
Right.
With backdated documents.
But It's a little too late. A few days later, agents from the IRS and the FBI come a knocking on Miracle's door.
IRS to save the day.
Exactly. But Ciavarella is like a big brother to Miracle, so he lies to the feds. This doesn't really have an effect. Despite Miracle's best efforts in covering for his friend, the government has plenty of evidence. In 2009, a grand jury decides to hand Mark Ciavarella and Michael Conahan a 48-count indictment. Racketeering, fraud, money laundering, extortion, bribery, and of course, federal tax violations, among other crimes. Prosecutors allege they received more than $2.6 million in illegal kickbacks. Shortly after the indictment, Ciavarella and Conahan shockingly resign from the bench. While Luzerne County begins their own in-house investigation as to how this abhorrent behavior was allowed to thrive for years.
And when you look at 48 indictments, that's a pretty high number of indictments. In fact, there's only one person publicly that I know at the current moment who has more indictments than that. But shouldn't they have an indictment for each and every one of those children whose rights were violated by the pair? And even though the direct judge was Ciavarella, he was in cahoots with Conahan, and they were doing this together. So, as you might expect, Ciavarella and Conahan pled guilty to honest services fraud, that's what it's called, and tax fraud.
They can't argue they didn't get the money, I guess.
And they can't argue that they didn't report the income that they got. Remember, even illegal income is taxable. However, so here's where they pled guilty. They enter a plea of not guilty to the rest of the charges. But the following year, Conahan decides he's just going to give it up. He pleads guilty to racketeering conspiracy. It's a 39-count superseding indictment that gets returned. But Ciavarella, he maintains more of his innocence.
Well, the case quickly becomes a national sensation, making headlines and news channels all across America. It gets named the Kids for Cash scandal. Despite the massive amount of media attention and the nation's disgust over Ciavarella's actions, he still sticks to the belief he is mostly innocent.
Can you be mostly innocent?
I'm shocked he just didn't cop a plea.
This sounds like mostly pregnant.
Exactly. It seems he thinks the news is sensationalizing the whole thing, and he's not as bad as the press is making him out to be. Here's Ciavarella defending himself to a reporter on 2020, the TV show.
Yes, that's what it says. We came to a plea agreement because we would never agree that that was improper. And that's why in the plea agreement, you don't see any of that language. I'm not pleading guilty to anything relative to cash for kids, embezzlement, extortion, quid pro quo. Absolutely not.
He didn't take any time with these kids. He didn't let them have an attorney.
Oh, that's not true. That's not true.
Liar. Finally, in February of 2011, the case goes to trial. Can you believe this guy actually made this go to trial? What an idiot. He's so arrogant.
Oh, I know.
Thinks he can get away with this stuff even after his buddy pleads guilty. So what's interesting is now he's on the other side of the bench, right? It's what you might think of as the wrong side. And he's watching some friends and colleagues tell the truth and testify against him. So Robert Powell goes on the stand. Robert Miracle take the stand. And in 2009, Powell pleaded guilty to failing to report a felony and being an accessory to tax evasion conspiracy because he was helping. So he cooperated with the feds in exchange for a lighter sentence. And of course, that's when he becomes a witness for the state and the feds. Robert Miracle also pled guilty in 2009 with similar hopes of being granted a lighter sentence. Even Ciavarella himself gives testimony. And that shouldn't be shocking for someone with that level of arrogance.
Right.
And he claims that, quote, I never would have considered the money Rob Miracle paid to me was illegal. Never in my wildest dreams did I consider that money to be a kickback.
Give me a break, Mark. No one buys your story. We're not buying it at all. Any judge worth their salt knows everything you did was unethical and illegal. Allow me to borrow one of your quotes. What the hell makes you think you can do this kind of crap?
That's funny. Turnaround is fair play, right? After 11 days of deliberation.
That long?
The jury comes back with a verdict. They find Mark Schiavarella guilty on just 12 of the 39 counts.
Oh, my God.
Including racketeering, racketeering conspiracy, money laundering conspiracy, conspiracy to defraud the United States, several counts of that honest services mail fraud that the other guy pled guilty to, and several counts of filing false income tax returns. Schiavarella is sentenced to 28 years in prison. Meanwhile, Conahan gets 17 and a half years. Each of them, of course, are ordered to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in restitution, which, of course, will probably never be seen.
Now, 12 out of 39 sounds not great, but I like 28 years in prison.
I do as well.
Right? So I'm sure you're wondering about the victims because...
They should have been sentenced for each of their victims.
Oh, I agree. I honestly, while 28 years is good, I would like to see 128 years. Right. Now, to the victims, thankfully in 2012, a judge expunges the record of every juvenile tried by Schiavarella. So it's not going to haunt them for the rest of their lives.
At least that part.
In that, legally, right? Thousands of juveniles are awarded monetary damages in civil lawsuits against Schiavarella, Conahan, PA Child Care, and Western PA Child Care, along with one other detention center that detained them unlawfully. In fact, just last year in 2022, the disgraced judges were ordered to pay over $200 million to nearly 300 victims.
And I'm really happy to hear that. But the question I have is, what's the likelihood that they'll be able to collect on any of this? PA Child Care, do they have any money? Because remember, they depended on the judges to provide them with income. So hopefully they have insurance of some sort that will kick in to give these poor kids at least a little semblance of restitution.
Well, the judges do have that condo that rented for $600,000.
Yes, they should let the kids use it for free. Absolutely. So even though it appears that justice is being served, nothing's going to ever make up for those lost years. And it's not, there's so many victims here. It's not just the teens, their parents, their siblings, their grandparents, their friends. There's so many victims here. It's like a ripple effect.
And the psychological damage to being imprisoned for something you didn't actually do.
Yes. And that's where it gets worse because tragically, one young man died by suicide.
Oh, God.
After this experience at the hands of Schiavarella, he's got blood on his hands. Other kids have developed drug and alcohol addictions. Many suffer from mental illness, depression, anxiety. A lot of victims struggled to finish their education, which of course impacts their future as well. But there are some positives. Remember Hillary Transu?
Right.
And her mom was the vicious mama bear. She was the one that did that fake MySpace page. She's actually become an advocate for juvenile justice reform.
Good. Excellent. Now, you may be wondering where our crooked judges, Conahan and Schiavarella, are. Well, Conahan spent nearly a decade in prison, but he was released to home confinement due to the pandemic. I know. If you ask me, he should not have been left out.
No.
Period. End of story. Schiavarella is currently where he belongs, rotting in jail, even though he's appealed throughout the years. Because,
of course,
he's still innocent. Wink, wink. The courts have routinely upheld the original conviction and sentence. Schiavarella has about 16 more years but he's 73, so it is unlikely he will ever escape prison.
That's good. I think he deserves a life sentence. So justice was absolutely served here. And that's really where the story ends. Man, Tom, this whole saga made my blood boil. And at the same time, I've got all this anger, but it breaks my heart at the same time because it's so sad how many victims there were. There just even aren't, there's no words to really communicate how evil Ciavarella and Conahan are. I mean, it's one thing to have a difference of opinion about appropriate discipline.
Right.
Ciavarella, we learned, had a harsh upbringing. Maybe there was some borderline abuse there. But this goes so far beyond that difference in opinion of appropriate punishment. He did not consider these kids human beings.
No, not at all.
And then when we look at Miracle, Powell, and anyone else who complied with the judge's vile demands, they should be ashamed of themselves. There is just little forgiveness and mercy in this world for people who hurt kids.
Absolutely. This was definitely a tough story, but I think it was an important one that we shared because we have to bring these cruel injustices to light.
And I love how much of a role the IRS can play in something like that. Because who would think that when the system is rigged and the judges are committing crimes against children, that it would be the IRS who comes in to save the day? So that's very, very exciting. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this two-part series called Delinquent Judges and Juvenile Delinquents. If you're interested in learning more about this Kids for Cash scandal, there is an excellent book that I read. It's called Kids for Cash, Two Judges, Thousands of Children, and a $2.8 million Kickback Scheme. It's written by William Eckenbarger. And there's also a documentary you can check out. It was made in 2013. The title is Kids for Cash, directed by Robert May. But steel yourselves for this because there's a lot of very intimate shared stories about the victims that were involved. And it just makes you angry.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode. And we're glad you could join us. Please consider subscribing to the show and leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
It also really helps us out if you share this with your friends. You know, Tom, everyone needs a tax crime junkie podcast in their life. So please help us spread the word and keep coming back for more. And remember, until next time, every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.